The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have spent a number of programs simply looking at scientists, most of whom were unregenerate's views of how the earth could have come into existence without a creator. I thought this might be as good a time as any other to look at the Big Bang, which is probably the predominant view today. While it is true that it has the approval of a great many scientists, I've made the comment on a couple of occasions that there really is not a scientific basis for it. And inasmuch as it is something that you will read about or listen to often, or perhaps if you have access to PBS, see programs there dealing with it, I thought perhaps it would be helpful to examine what the idea is, as well as look at some objections to it. In 1993, there was an article that appeared in The New Scientist. It was written by a man by the name of Narlicker, Giant Narlicker. And the title of the article was Challenge for the Big Bang. And in this, he gives at least a brief description of the Big Bang. As those of you that have listened to the program regularly are aware, I am certainly not an astronomer. And my area of expertise is in biology. But this article gives a brief description of the Big Bang, as well as some of the problems, so I thought it might be a good place for us to start. New Scientist, June 19th, 1993, an article entitled Challenge for the Big Bang, on page 27, quote, questions of origin have always been the most difficult ones to answer, but perhaps the most fundamental of all questions concerns the origin of the universe. Many astronomers and physicists today feel they have found the answer. They believe that the universe was created at one instant in a hot explosion called the Big Bang, and that the basic structure of matter was decided in the first billion, 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 billionth part of a second, 10 to the minus 36 seconds. But this hypothesis has serious deficiencies, which result from the satellite COBE, which the results from the satellite COBE have only served to highlight. And we mentioned several programs ago, I don't know, again, some of you are listening that were not listening then, the COBE stands for the Cosmic Background Explorer. Now, here in this statement, you have a succinct summary of the Big Bang, and among other things, in 10 to the minus 36th seconds, you had an explosion that presumably determined the structure of all the matter in the universe. If you are a thoughtful person, and if you have any knowledge of science at all, there ought to be some immense questions. We've already established that this is not a scientific view, and I don't know that the founders would claim it to be, although some of the proponents certainly have made that claim. But it happened at a time when there was no possibility of observation. That's what I want you to understand. Now, that explosion occurred, and if you would go to the document that describes the theory, you would find that there are some very specific, intricate descriptions of events that are occurring in billionths of a second. Now, that in itself ought to raise some questions, at least. But what happened after that? There should have been simply a smooth, continuous expansion away from that pinhead-sized initial explosion. And our universe simply, that doesn't describe our universe. We have what some astronomers refer to as a lumpy universe. You have matter in one place, not in another. And there are huge areas that do not contain any matter. So rather than having a uniform expansion of matter away from that pinhead-sized site, this is just not what we find. And again, if you're curious, there's all kinds of stuff you can go to and read about, both in books and on the internet. But I want to continue now with the comments that Narlicker has made in this article. He gave this first brief description. Now let me go back to quoting. These are on page 28 and 29. Quote, "There are three major problems with the Big Bang model. First, as a theory of physics, it breaks a cardinal rule by violating the law of conservation of matter and energy. At the instant of the Big Bang, the entire universe is created in what is known as a singular event or singularity. Physics is believed to apply only after this instant." Again, I'll interrupt the quote. Here was a one-time event. It has not been observed since. And everything that we see in the universe has come about as a result of that. This is a problem. Now, to return to the quotation, quote, "Secondly, the microwave background is believed to be the strongest evidence for the Big Bang. Yet such a fundamental feature of the radiation as its temperature cannot be deduced from any calculations of the early universe. Its value is assumed," end quote. Now, the reason for that should be apparent. We don't have any temperature measurements from that time. So when you start reading about the temperatures that were occurring, you just have to understand this is Alice in Wonderland, because the gathering of scientific information was simply impossible for reasons we've talked about at some length. Now, let me return to the quotation. Quote, "The third problem is that the Big Bang cosmology is supposed to explain the origin of most light nuclei." Light here meaning the lighter atoms. It's not talking about visible light, but atoms such as hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, etc. "The third problem is that the Big Bang cosmology is supposed to explain the origin of most light nuclei. But although it can with some success explain the formation of helium and deuterium, it runs into problems with other nuclei such as lithium, beryllium, and boron. Even with deuterium, it places such stringent upper limits on how much baryonic matter, ordinary matter in terms of neutrons and protons, is allowed in the universe that it forces astronomers to suggest that dark matter, thought to make up most of the mass, is in some exotic form. Furthermore, the most popular version of the Big Bang model, that involving inflation, implies a total age for the universe that is uncomfortably small compared with the ages of our galaxy or of globular clusters and other galaxies. The knots into which Big Bang theorists have tied themselves in the post-Kobe era convinced Fred Hoyle, Jeffrey Burbidge, and myself that we should seriously explore an alternative theoretical framework for cosmology." And then he goes on here to describe that cosmology, which is known as a quasi-steady-state cosmology. And Hoyle and Burbidge, for those of you that don't know, are well-known, well-recognized astronomers. Now, what I've tried to do here, at least somewhat briefly, is give you a picture of what the Big Bang actually is, and then note these three major difficulties with it. And if you are interested, again, you certainly are free to go and examine from reputable sources as much or as little about that as you want to. Now, let me read you some comments by other astronomers about this. Alan H. Guth, again, in an article, Cooking Up the Cosmos, that appeared in Astronomy, September of 97, quote, "So, to produce a universe by the standard Big Bang description, one must start with the energy of 10 billion universes," end quote. Now, that statement is worth noting. To produce a universe by the standard Big Bang description, one must start with the energy of 10 billion universes. I have a workshop I do occasionally that is titled, "How Much is a Million?" It is my personal opinion that no sane person can have any sensible idea of how much 1 million is. Now, we can come up with all kinds of cute pictures, illustrations, examples to try and portray that figure in a number that is workable, sensible, that's something that people can react to. But we're not talking here about millions. We're talking about billions. Now, try and think of the energy that is available even in our own universe staggers the imagination. But here, you have to start off with the energy from 10 billion universes. Now, Guth follows that quote, "So to produce a universe by the standard Big Bang description, one must start with an energy of 10 billion universes." Quote, "So, in the inflationary theory, the universe evolves from essentially nothing to all, which is why I refer to it as the ultimate free lunch." You're starting off with a pinpoint somewhere that includes all of the matter of our present universe, and then it expands in fractions of a second. This is a very interesting way of trying to avoid the problem of nothing giving rise to something, but it is exactly that theoretically impossible kind of thing. Where did the nothing come from? Where did this pinpoint? Where were the forces, the energy that compressed the matter of our universe into that pinpoint? Pinhead-sized mass. And again, we can rattle on and on and on discussing this. I'm not sure it's profitable, but at least it gives some idea of some of the problems that we find ourselves with. Now, you can spend the rest of your life, probably, at least you can spend some years, reading about the Big Bang if you want to. Some of the materials that you will read will include, legitimately, some of the problems involved in that. Many of them simply present it as a foregone conclusion and as something that has to be, is perhaps the only acceptable model, mechanism, whatever you want to call it, that is available today. And I say again, it simply is Alice in Wonderland.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.